I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's August 22nd, and we have a lot to talk about. Over the past couple of years, we've seen a growing body of evidence that, contrary to what was once believed to be true, exercise and physical activity can deliver a number of important benefits for people living with MS and can actually improve your quality of life. The National MS Society recommends exercise or physical activity for everyone living with MS at every level of ability. So, how do we go about identifying which exercises are right for different levels of ability? Well, in this episode of Real Talk MS, Dr. Gretchen Hawley joins me to talk about what kinds of exercise you can and should be doing at your level of ability. Dr. Gretchen is the founder and creator of The Missing Link, and missing in this case is spelled M-S-I-N-G. It's an online program that helps people with MS feel more confident in their strength, walking, and daily activities. Dr. Gretchen's new book, The Missing Link, The Essential Guide to Improve Walking, Strength, and Balance for People with Multiple Sclerosis, offers tools to take control of your MS symptoms and to feel empowered. You can also find Dr. Gretchen sharing MS-specific exercises and strategies on your favorite social media platform. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Gretchen, there are a few other things that you should know about. Last year, a landmark study identified the Epstein-Barr virus, or EBV, as a trigger for MS. The Epstein-Barr virus is the virus that causes mononucleosis. But most people who are infected by EBV never develop mono. Instead, they develop mild, cold-like symptoms. About 95% of the world's population carries the Epstein-Barr virus, and clearly, 95% of the world's population does not have multiple sclerosis. So EBV isn't the cause, but it's been shown to be a necessary trigger for MS. And experts have hypothesized that eliminating the Epstein-Barr virus would eliminate most of the MS in the world. Now, since it was announced that EBV triggers MS and some cancers, there's been a concentrated effort within the research community to develop an EBV vaccine. And a research team in Australia announced that they've developed an EBV vaccine that succeeded in inducing a durable immune response in mice. Now, the Epstein-Barr virus lives in B cells in our immune system. This vaccine works by using T cells in the immune system to identify B cells that have been infected by EBV and then killing those infected cells. In preclinical experiments, a vaccine was shown to induce the production of antibodies that could neutralize EBV, in addition to producing those killer T cells that would seek out already infected B cells and kill them as well. The immune responses driven by this vaccine began to decline after just 7 weeks. But they were still sustained at higher levels above non-immunized animals for at least 7 months. Now, I want to add a necessary word of caution here. This is information from a very early stage in the research process. As you can well imagine, there's a vast difference between a mouse brain and a human brain. But this is an encouraging step forward as scientists continue their efforts to develop a vaccine that one day may actually end MS in the world. The next step for this experimental vaccine will hopefully include a small pilot study involving human participants. And when it does, you'll be hearing about it here. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. The National MS Society announced an investment of $19.4 million in multi-year funding to launch 15 new research grants, 29 new fellowships and early career awards to support the MS workforce, and two strategic initiatives designed to extend knowledge to be gained from two previously conducted clinical trials. These latest investments are part of the National MS Society's annual investment of over $30 million to support a research portfolio of more than 200 new and ongoing MS research studies around the world, and that includes support for the International Progressive MS Alliance. The new projects being funded represent the most promising research areas identified in the Pathways to Cures Global Research Initiative, an initiative that's focused on three important outcomes: stopping MS, restoring lost function, and ending MS forever. Projects designed to stop MS in its tracks include an Australian research team that's looking for evidence for a role for diet in stopping MS progression, and a team at the Cleveland Clinic who, along with their collaborators, are following up with participants from a previous clinical trial to identify a brain MRI marker that better predicts whether a therapy is working in people living with progressive MS. One of the projects designed to restore lost function comes from researchers at the University of Colorado, who will be testing whether electrical nerve stimulation can reduce fatigue in a clinical trial involving people with MS. And when it comes to ending MS forever, one of the projects is from a team of scientists at Stanford University who are exploring a novel technology with an eye toward developing a vaccine that may prevent the Epstein-Barr virus from triggering MS. Now, if you'd like to review the details for all of the funded research projects, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And if you have the free RealTalk MS app installed on your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet, you'll find that research review waiting for you under the bonus content tab. Exercise delivers benefits to everyone living with MS at every level of ability. That's settled science. But when you're thinking about adapting exercise to meet your level of ability, things might seem a little confusing. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Gretchen Hawley, who's going to help us better understand which MS-specific exercises can help improve your strength, balance, and walking. Move it or lose it. We hear it often, and it applies to everyone, perhaps especially people who are living with MS, because aside from the health benefits that exercise and physical activity provide to all of us, exercise and physical activity have been shown to improve quality of life and even help manage some MS symptoms. Joining me to talk about how exercise and physical activity can be adapted for everyone living with MS at every level of ability is physical therapist and certified MS specialist, Dr. Gretchen Hawley. Dr. Gretchen is the founder and creator of The Missing Link, and I'll tell you now, that is spelled M-S-I-N-G, but that's hard to say. So we're going to say The Missing Link, an online program that helps people with MS feel more confident in their strength, walking, and daily activities. Dr. Gretchen's new book, The Missing Link, The Essential Guide to Improve Walking Strength and Balance for People with Multiple Sclerosis, offers tools to take control of your MS symptoms and to feel empowered. Dr. Gretchen also shares MS-specific exercises and strategies on her social media platforms, including YouTube, Instagram, and more. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Gretchen.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you'll start us off by sharing some of the benefits people with MS experience when they incorporate lifestyle physical activity and exercise into their everyday routine.
Definitely. I think this is a great starting point because so often my clients with MS feel like they can't reap the same benefits of exercise as someone who doesn't have MS, because they can't exercise as hard or they can't exercise in the same way that they used to. And I think it's worth pointing out that people with MS have just as much likelihood of reaping the benefits of exercise as people without MS, even if your exercise and movement looks different. So some of the most popular benefits of exercise, of course, are the endorphins. I think that's one of the number one things that people talk about. And it's worth talking about because especially with MS and or just life stressors, things get in the way. And when that happens, it's easy to not focus on ourselves. So the better we feel, the more consistent we can be with our healthy habits. But in addition to that, it improves circulation. It improves blood flow. It improves our cognition, our memory, our strength, balance, flexibility, movement overall. Just day-to-day activities can be a lot easier when we're exercising consistently.
Can you explain the difference between MS-specific exercises or functional exercise and I guess what we can refer to as regular or traditional exercise?
Yes. So regular or traditional exercise is a type of exercise where you are looking to improve overall strength, balance, flexibility. There's no one specific goal, just generally you want to be stronger or generally you want better balance. So those types of exercises are things like if you were at a physical therapy clinic, the clamshell exercise or the straight leg raise or side-lying leg raise. They're all great exercises, but when you have MS, your muscles and nerves and brain and neural pathways, they don't have the same carryover. So often what happens if you're only doing regular or traditional exercises is you'll feel like you're getting a lot stronger, but your walking's not any easier or your stair climbing's not any easier. These specific functions and day-to-day activities are not any easier. And it's because you weren't additionally doing functional exercise. So functional exercise is different from regular exercise in that it starts with picking a very specific goal that you're working towards. And then you break that goal down into as many movements as possible. And those movements are now your individual exercises. So let's take the example of you want to improve your walking. Taking a single step forward requires you to first shift your body weight forward, then to bend your knee, then to lift your toes and your ankle to reduce foot drop, then to bring your knee forward into this marching movement, then straighten your knee, then put your heel down. And all while that was happening, you were standing on one leg. So those are seven different movements that I just mentioned. And each of those seven movements can be their own exercise. For example, that first movement was just shifting your body weight forward. So you could practice shifting your body weight forward and then backward and then forward and then backward. The second movement was bending your knee. So you could practice standing and bending your knee or sitting and bending your knee, or even in bed or on your couch, bending your knee. So you take each of those seven movements and do each one as an exercise. That is what a functional exercise is.
Tell us how a physical therapist can help someone design a structured exercise program that promotes their overall well-being and helps them maintain independence in accomplishing their daily activities.
Yes, a lot goes into creating an exercise program for each individual. And the first thing that it has to start with is your goals and your difficulties. And so the one thing that you can do to ensure that you're going to get the best program for you and your goals and symptoms is to go to your physical therapist with a big long list of your goals, but also what day-to-day things are challenging and or what day-to-day things do you want to be easier? And list them all. It could be getting dressed. It could be showering. It could be walking. It could be getting into and out of your car, getting up off the floor. List everything. The more you list, the more specific your PT can create exercises for you. So get really specific with those things. And then we will ask further questions to dig deeper. For example, if you had mentioned that you want to improve your walking, we will ask questions like, what about your walking is hard? Is it the lifting of your leg? Is it the balancing component? Is it the speed that you're walking? Is it the endurance? Do you not have the stamina that you want? Is it all of it? And then we're able to piece together a program that includes lots of different types of exercises. For example, strengthening, stretching, balance, stamina-based exercises, speed, cardio, and aerobic exercise. Your plan should include multiple types of exercises, not just strengthening or just stretching. So that's how a PT can help you with your specific goals and exercise program.
What is neuroplasticity, and how can physical therapy help individuals with MS maximize their neuroplasticity while also addressing some of the other common MS symptoms like fatigue or spasticity?
Neuroplasticity is the ability of our brain to do one of two things, and it can do both in one individual. The first thing that it does is it can strengthen our neural pathways. So a neural pathway is the nerve connections that start in your brain and go all the way down to your spinal cord, and then they come down into literally every single muscle that we have. So neuroplasticity is the ability to strengthen that pathway. Now, it also is the ability to rewire itself. So if that pathway isn't working at all right now due to demyelination, neuroplasticity is the ability of your brain to rewire itself, find a new way to get that muscle stronger. So essentially, it's the reason that someone with a progressive demyelinating disease like MS actually can get stronger, improve your walking, improve balance, improve mobility, because of these two ways that neuroplasticity works. So the way to get it to work for you is to practice the specific movements that are really challenging for you, the ones that you're noticing weakness in. And I just want to point out, because I know how it sounds, it is going to be hard. It's likely going to feel defeated, and it can be really challenging to make yourself do something that you know you're not going to be good at. I'll just put that out there. But it's what's necessary for neuroplasticity. Even if you try to move your foot or your knee or hip and it doesn't move at all, that's okay. Neuroplasticity can find a new way to move that limb. We don't know how long it takes. It could take anywhere from a few weeks or months to a few years, depending on what your current neural pathway is like. So it really does take consistency. And it mostly works for strengthening. So if you have weak muscles, that's how we can get them stronger. But when it comes to fatigue, it can also help there too, because oftentimes, when we have weakness, we start overcompensating with muscles that are already strong. But then when those muscles get tired, you have no backup supply of strength. And then your fatigue hits like a ton of bricks. So by using neuroplasticity and strengthening the smaller, weaker muscles, you now will have a backup supply of strength. And so your fatigue can drastically improve through neuroplasticity exercises.
Aerobic exercise helps to build the strength and endurance of your heart and lungs. What are some examples of aerobic exercise, and how can these kinds of exercises be adapted to all levels of ability?
Aerobic exercise is a great form of exercise to improve your stamina, whether that's with something like walking or even just seated posture. And one thing that is unique about aerobic exercise that is not true for any other type of exercise is that when done prior to functional exercise, it can prime your brain for neuroplasticity, meaning not only is neuroplasticity possible for you, but it's even more likely to happen at a quicker rate if you do aerobic exercise first before your functional strengthening exercises. But what you might be thinking is, well, if I go for a walk before my exercises, my legs are going to be shot. I'm not going to be able to exercise after. So my favorite form of aerobic exercise is to use my upper body. And this way, you're able to get your heart rate up without at all fatiguing your legs, so that you then have enough strength and power to do your leg exercises afterwards. So just to give you some examples, if you are sitting unsupported, meaning you're in the middle of your chair, not touching the back, and just punching your arms forward, just one after the other, kind of like you're punching a punching bag, and go really fast. The faster you go, the more that's going to increase your heart rate. Or you can add more power. So with each punch, really pack a punch, really put as much oomph as you can behind each movement. So that's just the forward punches. You can also add a rotation. So you're punching side to side instead of directly in front of you. You can do what I call upper body jumping jacks. And so you just move your arms down by the side of your body, up towards your head, and then down and up, again, pick up the pace. That's going to make it harder. It's going to increase your cardio. You can also do rolling punches. So if you put your hands in fists and roll your hands over one another as fast as you can go, that's going to get your heart rate up. Really, any upper body movement will work. There's no right or wrong. Just keep moving and your heart rate will definitely start to increase.
This is something that might surprise some of our listeners. Can you talk about how aerobic exercise actually combats fatigue and has a positive effect on mood and MS-related cognitive issues?
Absolutely. Aerobic exercise is one of the quickest way to improve our mood. It's one of the quickest way to get our endorphins releasing. And the cool thing is that it doesn't even need to be that intense or that long. Just any amount, even just a few minutes of moving your body and getting your aerobic exercise in can increase your mood. And it can actually improve our memory and improve our multitasking ability. So the ability to walk and talk at the same time or have a conversation as you're standing up from a chair or a low surface. So there's a lot of power in aerobic exercise. Of course, doing it first is the way to prime your brain for neuroplasticity. But the way to include it into your program can be throughout the day. If you don't have enough energy, if you're really fatigued, then you might be listening to us right now and thinking, there is no way that I can do any form of aerobic exercise. And I would like to challenge that thought and say that anyone can do aerobic exercise, even if you have fatigue. There is a lot of MS research showing that aerobic exercise can reduce primary and secondary fatigue from multiple sclerosis if you're doing light or low to moderate exercise. You wouldn't want to just go and push yourself 100%. That is just going to cause even more fatigue. But light exercises, even some form of movement, can actually reduce your fatigue. So for example, anytime I'm working with a client who's suffering from more fatigue than usual on a certain day, I will give them exercises they can do in bed, just moving their arms in bed, and their energy can improve from that, or on their couch. It's nothing that you need to get up for. It's just requires movement in any position that you're able to get into.
Some people with MS have difficulty with balance and coordination, and this can directly impact their mobility and their stability. What are some exercises that can help improve balance and coordination for people who are living with MS? And I'm hoping you can mention a few different exercises based on different levels of ability.
My favorite balance and coordination exercises are in alignment with the goals that you have. For example, as we talked about a bit earlier, if you have a goal of improving your walking, one thing that we mentioned, one of those seven steps was single leg balance, aka standing on one leg. So if you have a goal of improving walking, you must be able to stand on one leg steady for at least 3 seconds. That should be more than enough time for you to advance your leg forward. So you can use a mobility aid. I think I forgot to say that earlier. But even if you're using a mobility aid, you still have to stand on one leg to move the other leg forward. So simply practicing standing on one leg as an exercise. Can you stand there for 1 second, for 2 seconds, three, maybe even 5 or 7? But practice that as its own exercise. And of course, on both sides. When you're practicing standing on one leg, It's probably going to be really challenging. So hold on to a mobility aid as lightly as possible and make sure your knees are not locked. You want to make sure your knees are slightly bent. Additionally, staggered stance balance is something that we need in day-to-day situations all the time. If you are reaching into your closet to grab out whatever you're going to wear for that day, if you're reaching forward to shake someone's hand, if you are reaching to pick up the dog food bowl, we're often in a staggered or lateral stance side by side where we're shifting our weight. And so practice standing in a staggered stance or just feet side to side, nice and wide, and reaching for something. This is a great functional balance exercise when you're standing, and it can also be done seated. So my two favorite seated balance exercises are, first and foremost, sitting up tall in the middle of your chair and stay there for as long as you can. It always sounds a little silly to think of that as an exercise, but you'll see if you try that for a few minutes, it absolutely is a great balance and core strengthening exercise. And then to make it a little bit more challenging, when you're sitting up tall in the middle of your chair, slowly reach to one side and then come back to the center. Then reach to the other side and then back to the center. Maybe reach forward, then back to the center, reach down. There's no right or wrong, but move your body weight around in this seated position, and that can improve your seated balance. When we talk about coordination, the most common situation that my clients are in where they noticed poor coordination is when they're walking and they feel like they're walking like they're drunk because their leg is not going where they want it to go. It might go too far out or across their body. So therefore, one of my favorite coordination exercises to make sure your leg goes exactly where you want it to go is to practice touching your heel to a specific item. So you can do this seated or standing, but you want to put something low to the ground, even something as low as a post-it note. And you want to lift your leg up and tap your heel to touch the post-it note, and then lift and come back to your starting position. Then lift and tap, lift and back. And what you're doing, of course, it requires strength too, but you're also working that coordination and you're training your brain exactly where you want your foot to go.
Since you mentioned mobility aids a moment ago, can you tell us about mobility aids that can assist with exercise?
Absolutely. One of my favorite mobility aids that I like to use with almost every person I work with is a rollator. And the reason for this is because when you're doing standing-based exercises and they're challenging, using a rollator can take balance out of the equation. If your balance isn't ideal and we're trying to work on strengthening exercises, you are not going to get effective strengthening because your balance is so off. So holding on to something can allow you to not worry about balance and therefore focus on strengthening your muscles and getting those neural pathways and neuroplasticity to really start kicking in. So I love using a rollator. However, trekking poles can also be great, or a single cane or a walking stick. Those are usually the three that I like to use when people are working on walking. However, if you are spending more of your time sitting, there are other forms of mobility aids or helpful tools like the leg lifter to help you lift your leg in and out of bed or in and out of a car. Or there's something called the dictus band that can help you lift your ankle so that you can position yourself a little bit better when standing or seated.
Well, the name of the book is The Missing Link: The Essential Guide to Improve Walking Strength and Balance for People with Multiple Sclerosis, and you can find it online at Amazon. Dr. Gretchen, thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS, and thanks so much for talking with me today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/312. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free RealTalk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of RealTalk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.